May it please the Court, Attorney Murray Hiltz for Fajardo's Hotel. Basically, the issue at hand, sole issue, is whether the petitioners have met the first prong of 7 years physical presence for suspension and deportation. We believe the petitioners have met that through two routes, through the Barahona class action and case law Guadalupe Cruz. By the plain meaning of the Guadalupe Cruz, they met the burden. In number two, there's numerous groups, but number two is a group that we're only worried about in this case. First situation is whether the cases were pending at the BIA from February 13th, 1997 to April 1st, 1997. This decision, the immigration judge's decision was in 95, and the BIA dismissed the case in 98. So during that whole time, it was pending before the board.
Counsel, are you even a member of the class here? What year did your client apply for suspension of deportation?
I think in motion to reopen was March of 98.
But that doesn't put you during that time period in 1997 that seems to be covered by the class action.
Well, if you look at the plain meaning of the statute, all it does is bring up it had to be pending. It did not say it had to be pending.
Well, yeah, but doesn't it have to be? But what was pending in 1997 was your asylum claim.
Asylum claim.
Not your suspension of deportation claim.
That is true. But at the time, at that pending time, they were actually eligible. They had accrued the 7 years at that point. What they did was what would be normal situation. They waited till the decision was made by the
BIA. But the question is, what's covered by the class action?
I would think anybody that the plain meaning of group number two, and all it
group number two is who is eligible that's within the class action. I'm asking you whether you're even covered by the class.
Well, they were given a class action notification. I mean, I think
notification doesn't mean that you're a member of the class. That's oftentimes a notification that you may be a member of the class.
I would suggest that in light of the fact that this was a stipulation by the government, they agreed to the wording of group two. And the group two basically says, all I said is, was the case pending in that time period? And their case was pending in that time period. In questions where there's ambiguity, where it just says pending at this point, it doesn't say pending for suspension of deportation. In St. Cyr and Fonseca, it says lingering ambiguities go to the favor of the alien. And for that reason, all we're looking at is a plain meaning of the section group two, and all it says is whether it was pending. And that's all. There's nothing more to the situation. All the prongs are met. The other prong is whether they filed a notice of appeal before. Yeah.
The reason I ask, counsel, is that as I look at the class action settlement, your construction that as long as you were in the system in 1997 had some kind of an appeal, even if it's not an appeal for suspension of deportation, would seem to undermine the rest of the rest of the agreement.
It doesn't undermine the category. It basically, they wrote in the category. It was a negotiated.
Well, but your interpretation of Category 2 seems to make mincemeat of Category 1.
Well, I'm not. It's just all you have to meet is one category. You don't have to meet all the categories, and they meet categories.
Well, yes, but shouldn't we try to construe this agreement in a way that tries to make sense of all the provisions, or just Category 2 provisions?
It's so conflicting. I don't think you can do that. I think that.
Okay, so your position is that the document is self-contradictory, and therefore we should just construe it against the government. And
yes, I mean that's one way to look at it. But I don't think we need to be that broad. I think if you look at number two, it basically states pending.
Right. Whose cases? But in light of number one, we might reasonably construe the word cases to mean those who have cases dealing with suspension of deportation, not anybody who's got an asylum claim, since this only deals with suspension of deportation claims. And it gives you very, very specific dates. If you've got a case pending before the BIA on appeal.
Well, my contention is this. I think it becomes kind of arbitrary at that point. On 97, if they would have done a motion to remand during that time period, they would have been eligible for that.
But they didn't.
But I don't. I think that makes it. I think that makes the language of the agreement very narrow. I don't think it needs to be that way. There is case law that suggests anything that is ambiguous, and clearly this is ambiguous, goes to the favor of the immigrant.
Counsel, there is also an and in paragraph 2. You not only have to have an appeal pending on that date, but on that date, your claim must have been denied on the basis of Section 309, which yours was not. Whether or not the decision of the BIA denying the suspension solely on the basis of 309 has already been issued or not.
Okay.
Your claim was not denied on the basis of 309. It wasn't in any danger of being denied on basis of 309, was it? It was denied on the basis of the fact that your clients didn't qualify for asylum.
The original. But...
I want you to look at that carefully. It says your case has to be pending between... Your appeal has to be pending between February 13th and April 1st, 1997, which your case was. But it didn't have anything to do with the second clause there, which is 309.
Well, there was a decision on 309 when we did the motion.
Years later.
Well, I would say it was still in the same relative context. They did it within the 90 days, which is all they have to do by statute. They did the motion to reopen within 90 days after the decision. It seems rather narrow to, if you construe it narrowly, they could have basically done a motion remand within that time frame and have been eligible.
It's hard to read a provision that says your case has to be pending between February 13th, 1997 and April 1st, 1997, anything but narrow, doesn't it, counsel?
It just says pending. It does not say for what. And in that context and in that time, this is what happened. I'll tell you exactly what happened in this case. Notorious came down. They basically did a silence. These people had a problem, but they're from Mexico. It was a very bad asylum. Only reason we took this case was because we knew at the time when we did the individual hearing that they were very close to getting 7 years. And that's why we took it, because they had a good chance of getting a motion reopened based upon 7 years. It was contemplated. I think that's more in the line of what the actual law was. So I don't think, in looking at the government stipulated to this agreement, and it says pending, and it says it was denied for motion to reopen, and that motion to reopen was based in a timely fashion. And then whether or not the decision of the BIA denying solely on the basis has already been issued, that's very, for one thing, it's very vague, and two, I don't think it's a narrowing provision at all. It also, and they have a footnote, it seems to be leading to something about repapering. It doesn't have really much to do with Section 2. Also, it says either direct appeal from the immigration judge or motion to reopen. So I think they're trying to make it as broad as possible. And I think the biggest contention in this case is plain meaning is there. Government was represented. They didn't object to the stipulation. And for that reason, it should be in the favor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. My name is Nicole Nardone. I'm the attorney for the respondent of the United States. Excuse me. The Court should find that the Board properly denied the petitioner's motion for reconsideration because they were ineligible to apply for renewed suspension of removal under the Barahona-Gomez class action. Barahona-Gomez, just as a matter of background, was a class action lawsuit challenging directives issued by the Executive Office for Immigration Review before the implementation of ARERA's stop time provision that prohibited immigration judges and the board from granting suspension deportation during a very small time period, approximately 3 months, between February 13, 1997 and April 1, 1997. The purpose of this class action is stated in the Barahona settlement, specifically it's stated in the notifications to class members. And those notifications really essentially are trying to boil down into the simplest language for the class members what the purpose of the settlement was. And one of the things that it states is that this class action covers persons who could have been granted suspension between the time period of February 13, 1997 and April 1, 1997, when EOIR's prohibition was in place.
Ms. Nardone, you may want to just rebut his argument. I think he didn't concede, but I think he recognizes that there were specific requirements for members of the class, and his client didn't meet those specific requirements. He says, but and then you should tell us why his but is either accurate or not.
Okay.
If you want to.
Sure, I would like to. The petitioner is arguing that he meets provision 2 of the class, and we dispute that argument for a very basic reason, which is that he simply doesn't meet the plain language of the requirement. Provision 2 requires three things. It requires that the petitioner have a case pending at the board during the relevant time period, for which, number 2, for which the a notice of appeal or reopen was filed on or before October 1st, 1996, and third, which was denied on the basis of the stop time provision. The petitioner doesn't meet all of these, all three of these factors. Although he filed a petition for appeal with the board, which was filed prior to the effective time period and was pending during the proper time period, this was not denied on the basis of the stop time provision. Rather, that appeal, as the justice has pointed out, was denied based on him not being eligible for asylum. And secondly, likewise, although he did apply for suspension of removal, he didn't do so until 1998, long after IRERA's stop time provision was implemented. And this,
are you saying that the stop time provision,
yes,
is a requirement of Section 2 of the stipulation or the agreement or whatever it is, the settlement agreement?
The settlement agreement does provide that the it requires three factors, the third of which being that the that it was denied on the basis of stop time provision. That the initial...
And he does not qualify for that?
He does not, because his...
Because it was denied, the claim that he had on file at the time was simply denied. He didn't show asylum.
It was denied for another reason. It was denied for asylum, was not denied for asylum.
And you say that is a requirement of subsection 2,
yes,
or section 2.
That's correct.
And therefore, even if section 2 eligible class members included... anyone who might fit within that section, even though they might not fit within the definition in Roman numeral 1.
Right.
Even if all we look to is 2, he still doesn't qualify. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying yes, that's right. Because he needs to have all three of those factors, and he didn't for this particular appeal. And, I mean, significantly, I think we need to look at the big picture here. If we're taking a look at what the intent of this settlement was, it was to provide remedy to those persons who had been essentially their applications for suspension. Although they got their applications in for suspension before IRERA started, before the stop time provision was implemented, they submitted their application for suspension. But there was this directive by EOIR that said we're not going to process these for 3 months. And the class action settlement was intended to remedy that problem. And clearly, the petitioner here does not fit into that three-month category because he didn't apply for suspension until 1998, which is long after IRERA had been implemented. And clearly, it would defeat the purpose of IRERA if we were to allow the petitioner to slide in long after Congress had spoke on this issue and said, you know, we're no longer going to allow people to accrue time for purposes of suspension of deportation up until the date that they apply. At this point, the Congress had already spoken on this issue. It already said stop time applies. So it simply wouldn't make sense to allow to interpret Provision 2 as applying to Mr. Sotelo's application for asylum, which had happened long before IRERA. Based on the foregoing, the Court should find that the Board properly denied Mr. Sotelo's motion for reconsideration.
Counsel, I know that you've argued that he doesn't qualify under paragraph 2. I guess the initial question I want to follow up on Judge Thompson's question is he even a member of the class in the first place?
Well, I argue that he's not, no. He's not a member of the class.
So we don't even have to get to paragraph 2.
Well, he's applying under the paragraph 2, which is why I'm addressing that issue. And I think the reason he's applying is because it can be, you can look at this language if you look at it and not look at it in the context, in the broader context of the settlement, and perhaps you can see that he at least argues that he fits into that provision. However, if you look at all of the other provisions for eligible class members, it makes very clear, for example, if you look in number, it's page in the Barahona case, it's at page 1031, Roman numeral 2, they set forth the eligible class members. And the title itself says, New Consideration of Applications for Suspension of Deportation. Now, again, Mr. Sotelo had not actually applied for suspension of deportation until after 1998, until after the ARERA was implemented. And if you look at each of the class members, that eligible class members, Provision 1 refers specifically to individuals for whom the immigration judge reserved a decision or scheduled a merits hearing on a suspension application. So the other provisions make more explicitly clear, I think, that the eligible class members include persons who had applied for suspension during that time period. Whereas, for some reason, Provision 2 doesn't specifically say you had to have applied for suspension. Although I think it's very clear from the purpose of this.
I'm looking at the definition of the class, which is in Roman 1 of the Barahona decision that you referred to. And that says all persons who have had or would have had suspension of deportation hearings conducted before April 1st, 1997.
Right.
That's the definition of the class.
Right.
Mr. Ricardo doesn't even seem to be within that definition of the class.
No, he's not, because he never applied for it. It obviously never really occurred to him that.
Not before April 1st, 1997, anyway.
Right. Not until 1998.
Okay.
There's no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.